comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. So wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful globe, we have something in store for you tonight that I think you're going to find very interesting, very compelling. My guest is James Horak. He's always controversial, always interesting, always makes you raise at least one eyebrow if he doesn't singe both of them. So we're going to have a good time, I'm absolutely sure. Now, you know, last night's show I've gotten a lot of real positive comments on because what we did is take a look at a screen capture out of one of NASA's own films. They produced it, and we saw all kinds of amazing things in that screen capture. Well, that video, that film that all that material came from, is now uploaded and available for viewing in our video galaxy in the members community. So if you are a member, don't do it right now, but you can go over to the video galaxy and you'll see it. The NASA and ESA Unite for Mars Exploration. That's it. Just click that link and you can watch it. I found additional cool stuff in that video very quickly. I just want to mention one thing that I found. As I was watching the video today, after I got it all processed and uploaded, I was watching it, and I saw this black rectangle on the side of a cliff, a big black rectangle that goes from the top of the cliff all the way to the bottom. And I wondered, well, okay, what are they trying to hide? Why did they put a big black rectangle there? And so I did a screen capture again. I loaded it into my photo software and changed the contrast, and what I discovered is, you know what, that's not a black rectangle that somebody put on there. That's actually a huge opening in the side of that cliff, and you can actually see up inside of it. I mean, it's dark in there, but you can see how the some of the strata of the rock actually goes on to the inside there, and it's a huge opening in the side of that cliff. I don't know how tall that is. What, a mile? I don't know, but it's gigantic. You could fly an airplane into that thing. It's absolutely huge, and it is basically in shape. It is rectangular. If you're not subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, The K-Files, be sure you scoot on over to my website and get subscribed, because, number one, it's free. Well, number one, it's good. Number two, it's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and there's absolutely no genius in sitting in the dark when light is available. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with James Horak. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Now, my guest, as I said, is James Horak. And at the top of the show, I showed you, if you're watching on our channel, and I described for you, if you're listening to the show tonight, some photographs from Mars. That isn't what we're going to be talking about. That's just a little leftover from last night's show. And what we're going to be talking about principally here tonight, although there's no way ever to know for sure when you have Horak on the show, we're going to be talking about the moon. James Horak, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Good evening, Kevin.
I hope you didn't take that as an insult, but, I just told the truth.
No.
James, a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, I did a show on the Tycho crater. And in fact, it is, if you go to my website, folks, and take the time to actually read what's on the page, most people don't anymore, but take the time to read, you'll see there is something called Featured Show. And we change that from time to time. Well, that show about Tycho is the featured show right now. Tycho crater on the moon near the South Pole. And what we looked at, what we talked about, was the fact that in their high-resolution photos, of course, they don't show us, they don't release to us the highest resolution they have, but it's better than what we used to get. But in their photos of Tycho crater, quite obviously and clearly, we can see there are structures. And in fact, I've done two shows on Tycho. There was the one that's the featured show, and then I did a follow-up show where I had found yet more structures in Tycho crater, artificial structures. And I want to let the folks know that in a conversation I was having with James, we were talking about the moon, and he brought up some things I think are pretty interesting, and I think that you would want to hear these things, and I don't know that you would hear them from anybody but James Horak. Like it says in the, if you look at the show info, click where it says show info and read that. If you're allergic to controversial topics, you should be broken out in a full bloom rash by the end of this show, because what we're going to hear tonight is going to be controversial. But James, let's talk about the moon, and let's talk about, first, all these structures that we're seeing in these pictures, is this our imagination, or do they really exist?
Oh, they exist. The moon teems with artificial structures, and a lot of them have to do with operations that have been going on the moon for a great deal of time. There are some up there that are early attempts to establish bases by earthbound humans. And that operation or that attempt went on for about 12 years. But there are various rumors about that, and a lot of them are true. But man was run off of the moon. Man was run off of Mars.
All right. I want to get to that question about man being run off of the moon and Mars in just a moment. And I want to get to the question of, in a moment, of when, why, and who did it. But first, let's talk about these bases. You said man-built bases on the moon. When were they built, and for what purpose were they built?
Well, they were, of course, trying to determine mineral wealth, but ever since the late 50s, they had begun the conflict that we now know as the New World Order, that made plans for it, devised it. One report was commissioned by President Kennedy, which was basically concerned about what kind of instability the end of war would cause. And so he commissioned a report. Most of the people that did it belonged to either one of three think tanks, one of them being CFR, of course, and the other one being Westinghouse. But various people worked on that report, and it came out, it was finished after his death. President Johnson was shown it and denounced it. He said he didn't want anything to do with it. It was called the Report from Iron Mountain. And then it was leaked. And when it was leaked, various people in various university departments across the country published it and started teaching it in their poli-sci classes. And when I was going to school, I audited a graduate poli-sci course, and they had it as required reading, and it was sold in the bookstore. So it was authentic, and it was called Report from Iron Mountain. And it laid out the contingencies of what you'd have to deal with to minimize any kind of damage to the status quo if you ended war. Of course, that really wasn't the concern of the people that took over that report after Kennedy's death, took over the project. Their concern was to establish a one-world government. And they even talk, if you get a good copy of that report, it even talks about the hostile alien thesis, how they'd create it, and that that would be the final step in implementing this new world order, which would be counter to the ideologies, religions, and concepts of a free society in countries like the United States and Great Britain. So if you read the thing, even though it was, they did everything, they pulled out all the stops to debunk it.
Mm-hmm.
If you read it today, with the retrospect that you have since it originally was leaked, which was back in 1965, 66, 67, if you read it today, the retrospect will prove it out to you. But, of course, people at the time didn't know that. They didn't have that retrospect. But today, they're more fearful of it than ever, the powers that be. And when that retrospect made it more and more valid, then people started reproducing it. When they did, they brought a fellow by the name of Levin out of the woodwork who claimed that he wrote it as a lark. And, of course, he'd never written anything else. And when you read it, if it was written as satire, it's a work of genius.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't write it. He's a liar. But nobody wants to go into a lawsuit. You can't come in and claim copyright when it's set out in the public domain for 40 years without you claiming authorship. So nobody would be in trouble with him, but they'd still have to fight the lawsuit, which would cost them a lot of money. So it was suppressed again. But it's legitimate, and there are people that are with recognizable reputations and so forth, will admit that they had something to do with it. So
okay, so what does that have to do with bases on the moon?
Well, it shows the planning for those bases. It shows, if you go a stretch further and you delve into an early English program and the reaction to that early English program, because it touched too many bases, fiction, called Alternative 3, then you get a perspective about about as early as the late 60s, they were actually sending people up on the moon and Mars and trying to establish bases.
So now how did they do this? Because, I mean, you know, it seems that it was sort of an extreme monumental task when they put a little beer can up on top of a Saturn V rocket with three people in it and fired them off towards the moon. It seemed that this was like a monumental task. So how is it that they were getting people to the moon, apparently with enough ease that they could explore the idea of having bases?
Well, they did it with EB craft.
Now, by EB, you mean?
Extra biological entities, the Greys.
Okay, where did they get these craft?
They had made an arrangement with them, and it was a cooperative arrangement. They would provide them subterfuge here on Earth, and the only time the EBs could safely leave the gravitational pull of the Earth and not be shot down by ETs was when humans were aboard. So it was doubly agreeable with both parties. But they used EB craft, and in fact, the EBs could make more of their 90-foot in diameter craft. They had 60-foot in diameter and 90-foot in diameter. So they made more of the 90-foot because the ceilings would be higher to accommodate the humans, and that's what they used, basically. And then once there, they developed the technology to transport items there that they needed for building and construction with something they talk about that they developed at Montauk, which was able to transmit matter, the transmission of matter. I don't think they intended to do it with living tissues, but they did it with inanimate matter.
All right. Now, for people who are brand new to this genre and brand new to this show, you just stepped off into something with the EBs, the ETs, and the transporter, where there are a lot of people saying, okay, well, this guy's cracked. So how do you know that this stuff really took place?
Well, one of the things, very strong evidence that I point to is a book that when I was selling books online, I had a book on lunar petrology. Now, this book was like 300 pages long, and it was compiled by separate university projects. But the information in this book, the mineralogy, the petrology, could not have been performed with any kind of remote device. It would have required teams of geologists and mineralogists to do on the moon, not here. It couldn't be done any other way. And once you got into the book, you realize that this was an open admission that they had teams of people working up there to make these findings and to be able to produce that book. And the book was so noteworthy that a Scandinavian scientist from Norwegian, from Norway, when I put it on my catalog that I had online, he immediately called me long distance, and he said, "You still have the book?" And I said, "Sure." And he says, "Would you send it? I don't care what it costs. To send it just priority mail, or to send it expedited any way you can. I don't care." And he says, "Are you still charging the same amount of money for?" I said, "Sure, sure. I don't raise my prices just because you're excited about the book, and I'm glad a scientist is getting it." And I sent it to him.
Mm-hmm.
But the amazing thing, I've discussed this before, and nobody ever asked me for the catalog numbers of that book or anything. Yeah, catalog number, mm-hmm. Library of Congress catalog number. We call it NSB number. But it had, I've got the invoice from
where you sold it. Yeah. All right. So now, let me say this about, things happening on the moon way before we thought, and in fact, things happening you never even thought. And you and I, James, have talked about this. The Russians landed on the moon, two that we know of. There could have been more. Two rovers, 34 years before we had a rover anywhere. But they landed two rovers on the moon. I think they were called Lukanod, rovers. They were remotely controlled and they were, atomic powered, nuclear powered. And that was way back in, the very early part of 1970 is when the first one landed. But here's the deal. In 1998, there was a conference held, a workshop held at Los Alamos National Laboratory, sponsored by NASA and JPL. And this was for the purpose of planning a water drilling mission to Mars. In 2000, when this show started, I reported on that. At that point, we were only two years away from that workshop. It happened in 1998. And I reported on that workshop. Some of you that have been with us since Kosovo, since way back when we first started this show, you remember when I talked about that. And here's the deal. James, in their notes from the workshop, which they had online and which I made public on the show, it talked about the various things they were going to do and what type of technology would be used to do each of these tasks. Now, for the actual drilling, and by the way, it was a drilling mission planned for the Cydonia region and on Mars. And the actual drilling technology, here's what it said. They had decided to use the proven successful Russian lunar drilling technology. That's a quote from their report. Most people had no idea the Russians were drilling anything on the moon, but they were. We'll be back right after this.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
You don't know why.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, James Horak, and we're talking about some pretty strange stuff about the moon. And we were just talking, James, about the early days of when they first began to do things on the moon. It was way back in the 1960s, and we're not talking about the Apollo program here. And I had just mentioned this workshop that was at Los Alamos in 1998. In 98, and the importance of that, folks, is the line in the notes that came out of that meeting that used to be posted online. I don't know if you can still find them or not. But it said the drilling technology they had decided to use on Mars was the, quote, proven successful Russian lunar drilling technology, end quote. That was the quote. And I said, who knew that the Russians were doing anything on the moon? But they were, and they were drilling. And it was proven technology that had been in 1998 determined to be the technology that would be used on Mars for a water drilling mission that they were going to do. Obviously, if they did this water drilling mission on Mars, they've never told us about it. But then they didn't tell us about the Russian lunar drilling either, did they?
Well, the only reason that you hear about the Russian and not the combined Russian or the combined Soviet-American operation that was actually going on is because the Soviets had a much tighter and controlled and secure society. They could mention these things without having too many inquiring minds going after more and more detail. But had we in America mentioned that we were doing these things, there would have been a lot more of an uproar. There would have been a lot more embarrassing questions asked. And there just might be enough leaks to point at what the ulterior motives of these operations were.
All right, so the long and the short of it is, for those who are just now hearing information about actual missions to build things on the moon and to build things on Mars, and they're just now hearing about it, they've been thinking, yeah, someday, 200 years from now, maybe we'll do that. They're actually 40 years behind the actual events.
More than that.
More than that, okay.
There has been a second technology in the world that the industrialists have had and exercised and used to their discretion, but they've kept from the rest of us because it would challenge the cartels, it would challenge the power placement, and it would be less lucrative. I mean, they've had this. Jules Verne detected this when he was writing 20,000 Leagues Beneath the Sea. There was a Captain Nemo, and there was such a craft as his submarine. And there are all sorts of reports of airships at the time that people saw, and they saw people on the bridge of these airships waving at them. These were ours. This was the second technology that began right after the Civil War. And it expanded to a point that by the beginning of World War I, there was a conspiracy to lie about what helium was, because they didn't want helium accessible to the Germans. The Austria-Hungarian Empire was beginning to build airships, and they were too good at what they did, namely to surveil potential battlefields, troop buildups, and so forth. And so the airships that the Germans, the Austria-Hungarian Empire, the Prussian Empire was building, all had highly inflammable gas and were very dangerous, and this kept them in tow, more or less. It kind of limited their flexibility with these craft. And scientists that had worked with helium were all in on a conspiracy to say that helium came from natural deposits in the panhandle of Texas almost exclusively. That's a big lie. There are no natural deposits of helium on Earth because helium wants to escape the Earth. The gravity on the Earth can't hold helium to it. So how could there be any natural deposits? Helium is acquired in the refining of oil into gasoline. It's a byproduct, and if you know how to collect it, you have to know the secrets of how to collect it, how to turn it into a liquid for shipment. And then, once that it has gone into a gas, you can return it back to a liquid, but all of these are trade secrets that are held by the three big gas companies, industrial gas companies, that have been doing this now for 100 years.
And, okay, so let's go back to the moon, though. I am aware that there is this, as you call it, second technology, and that is the technology of the rich. Let's put it this way: the excessively ultra rich power brokers on this planet. There is technology available to them, not available to the rest of the planet. I understand that. So. What it sounds like to me when I listen to you is that when we put these together, what you're saying is that this moon program where they built bases, and on Mars where they built bases, was affiliated with these extremely ultra-rich power brokers, the super elite.
It was a combination of the people that had the money to fund them, which would have been the banking cartel chiefly, and their captains and lieutenants, and those that they had influenced to garnish power in every nation, and also the up-and-comers, people like the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, who were just... becoming accepted in the upper class at the time. They've been there a long time now, but there are a number of people that you would think would be in the upper class that are not. The only way to know for sure is to get a social register and look in a social register. But of course now, for the last 20 years, social registers are only sold to people that are in them. Isn't that interesting?
How can you get a hold of one?
You have to get an old one.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know who's, you know, I know that Gates is not in the social register. A lot of people that you think would be in the social register are not. That's why they have this phony butt bloodline crap, you know. Oh, I'm not in the social register, but, you know, I have a relative that is. Yeah, sure you do.
Okay, so, well, you know, a whole bunch of them are related to Vlad Dracul, for real. For real.
In spirit.
Nah, you know, Bush, Cheney, and Kerry are all descendants of Vlad Dracul. George W., and Dick Cheney and John Kerry, the one that ran for president, at least that's what mainstream media reported. It was on several of the mainstream media news back during that that election. They're all descendants of Vlad Dracul, who, by the way, if you don't know, folks, that's the real Dracula. That's the real guy. Okay, so we had this second technology being used by the super elite, and they're building stuff on the moon, they're building stuff on Mars. Why?
Well, if you read the report from Iron Mountain, which has its own reality, and it's a reality that was in the minds of the people that sold this to the elite. And that is, they were projecting at the time not global warming, but what they call the greenhouse effect. That didn't sell, so, you know, along comes people like Albert Gore to dress it up in different doll clothes and, you know, rejuvenate it and sell it as something else. But it's neither valid nor is it convincing. But, you know, nonetheless... it was used to foretell that eventually there would be such cataclysms, there would be such an outcome that they would need to be safe from what was going on Earth until it could be stabilized or whatever. Actually, what was going on was the eugenists among them, not content with just doing things like that. They were already planning mass depopulation. And that's in the report from Iron Mountain, too. There are a number of things that are in the report from Iron Mountain. You have to understand that this is commissioned right after Kennedy became president. And he dies. Then it's finished. And it's published around, formally published around 1966. The first time I read it, I think it was 1967 or 68. And, I immediately, because of some of the contract work that I had done for the Ford Foundation, I knew immediately that it was the real thing. And I talked to some people that I worked with or worked under that they knew it, that had had something to do with it. And
okay, so what is it they were planning to do on the moon?
Build bases, a refuge for the elite.
A refuge, okay.
Yeah.
Kind of a Club Med?
Well, it goes along with what's in Alternative 3, and to this day, I believe that that Alternative 3, even though it was fiction and represented as fiction, I think that there was some whistleblowing going on in it. And when you read what was going on at the times, you see there are too many parallels. But, Neil Eisley is a good example that backs up many of the things that I'm saying right now.
Yes, and what a story Niara Eisley has. Oh, my. That is
She's telling the truth. She's telling the truth. She is not embellishing anything. I'm very impressed with her. What I like most about her is what she said she'd do to that soldier that raped her.
We're going to have to leave it right there simply because we have a break coming up. We can pick it up right there when we come back. And I want to get to, when were the humans told to leave the moon? By whom were they told? And why were they told to leave the moon? Marie Chatelain, who was the communications director for the Apollo missions, writes in his book that we were told to leave. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is none other than James Horak. I told you you'd be hearing information tonight that is controversial, and it is. And yet, much of what James has talked with us about is documentable. All you have to do is get that report from Iron Mountain. As a matter of fact, there's a video documentary of it. I think it's still on YouTube, and you can go there and watch it. Now, James, we talked about how this super elite funded the development of bases on the moon from the late 1950s forward. At some point, though, you said, we were told, the humans were told, to get off the moon. Who told them, when were they told, and why were they told?
Well, warnings were given long before I was ever involved. I was still more or less of something of a sleeper. And until 1975, I wasn't fully aware of my part. But as early as 72, there were issues that were being made about the weaponizing of space By 1978, it had become critical. And they were given the last warning. They didn't heed it. By 1982, the ETs on the moon and on Mars both released a terraforming fungus which would destroy, would actually eat the metal of all the Earth-produced metal. And it would give the people time enough to get away, to leave. And that's what happened. And one of the things that I wanted to discuss was that I saw images of tripods, of the legs of rovers, of the camera stands, not just tripods, but the single camera stands, the legs of some of the landing craft that were covered with this.
Okay, so when did you see those images, and how is it that you came to be able to see them?
Dr. Berggren got them. Dr. Norman Berggren had them, and he sent them to me. They came to me by way of an associate of mine at the time, and his associate. There were two other people involved, and we were sort of working together. And they were sent to me, and I saw them, and I suggested we keep the lid on them because, you know, and not show them at the time because it was important for us to get out what we knew about the EMVs. And this was so far out there that I didn't want it to be used to discredit our credibility with the EMVs. It was important for me, I felt, and for Dr. Berggren and his associate, a lady by the name of Casey Dawkins, to concentrate on the EMVs. And of course, I knew that when I had heard the talk about his next book, which has never been written, that it may have been written, but it's never been published. That the images would be in that, along with you know, more particulars.
Okay, but so let's pause for a moment here to catch people up to speed on Dr. Norman Berggren. If you don't know him, he is formerly now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but formerly worked for NASA. Is that correct?
He's worked for NASA, JPL, Ames. He has. Credentials along with the best of them. He's primarily an imagist, but he's a good scientist, and a good scientist is good in his field is good in astrophysics, astronomy, and evidently he had abilities and capabilities that went beyond that.
But right. So let me finish with introducing him. Folks, you've heard of a book called The Ringmakers of Saturn. That was written by Dr. Berggren, Dr. Norman Berggren. If you can get your hands on that book, you need to get it and you need to read it. Dr. Berggren reveals in that book the EMVs at work in the rings around Saturn and shows you pictures of them. But he is as credentialed as you can possibly get in the fields in which he worked for NASA, JPL, and Ames Research Center, which, of course, is space research. Okay, now, Dr. Berggren sent you these pictures, and what do the pictures show?
They show various earthbound apparatus on the moon. And I think there was some of Mars too, but there I saw at least 8 pictures, and they were of metallic objects like the legs of a lander and different things, a rover, different pieces of equipment, and they were covered with this fungus, and it would grow. And there were time-lapse photos that showed how rapidly it would grow. He had quite a bit. Now, I never asked where he got them, but I knew the man well enough to know that that there wouldn't be any doubt about their authenticity or validity.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he wanted he was thinking about making them public at the time, and I wasn't talking with him directly. I was reaching him either through the associate that was related to me, or the associate that was related to him, Casey Dawkins. I don't mention the name of the associate related to me because he betrayed Berggren behind Berggren's back. I found out about it, and I informed Casey Dawkins about it. Berggren had kind of become alienated with me because of that embarrassing question he asked me, and I answered it truthfully. So, you know, that pretty well dispensed with my having any more contact with him, and I understand that. Didn't hold it against him at all. I expected that would happen, but I had told him that that they would find the EMVs in the sun. He kept telling me, how do you know this? How do you know this? And he kept on and on. Finally, I just said, because I'm not from here.
And that pretty much topped it off right there.
That topped it off.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the moon. These are pictures that show this fungus growing on the metal and eating the metal, right?
Right. Well, it was. It wasn't. You know, it wasn't losing its strength if you got the devil off the moon and off Mars. If you gave you plenty of time, that was the idea. And it was to demonstrate the nature that you know, you don't belong here. You know, we're going to quarantine you. And it didn't reach that level until they began developing what they call Star Wars. And Star Wars was not what you were told. Star Wars was a reaction, one of these spiteful reactions that they thought they could demonstrate. Well, you can't shoot at our precious EVs anymore and throw us off Mars and the moon without us fighting back. Yeah, well, that's absurd. But that was basically in their minds.
Okay, so we got kicked off the moon, and I think everybody remembers Apollo 17, and we were all expecting, you know, well, what's going to be in 18? What's going to be 19? Well, 18 had already, and 19 had already been paid for. They were already built. The crews were already assembled and trained. All they had to do was do the final assembly, light the fire in the tail of the bird, and go to the moon. That was it. They were ready to go, and it had already been paid for. And they canceled them.
Yeah.
And they said, budget problems. Well, nobody believed that then, and nobody believes it now. How can, if it's already been paid for, if that's already happened, how can canceling it help your budget?
Well, especially when there's a mineral wealth on the moon that they know about and that they have wanted to get control of before any other nation did. But the problem is no other nation, unless there is some kind of secret deal made between ET and the...
We have to step away for break. I'll have to pick up right there when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted that you are here, and you have my sincere sympathy for whatever kept you away from that first hour. We are talking with James Horak this evening, and we're talking about the moon. James, the EBs, okay, why is it, because you've mentioned that there's this thing about the EBs are not allowed to leave Earth's gravitational field unless there are humans on board, because if they do, they get shot down by the ETs. EBs, extraterrestrial biological entity. ETs, extraterrestrials. What's the deal there? Why are they shooting at the EBs?
Well, they decided a long time ago, about 4,000 years ago, to eliminate the EBs because they're problematic. They interfere with cultures and civilizations that are trying to develop on their own, and they corrupt them. It's not something they intentionally do, but they are out of place. And so for the last several thousand years, they have been declining in number. And finally, this is their last refuge. And
when you say this is their last refuge, you mean Earth?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So if they're viewed as something that negative by extraterrestrials, what is it about them that has caused governments of this planet and the super rich of this planet to wrap their arms around them and say they're our friends?
A promise of technology, but it hasn't done you any good. All that it's done is complicate things. It's part of why the second technology exists, and it has entrenched an elite that's very arbitrary, very dangerous, very tyrannical. It has entrenched them that much more, and gotten in the way of social evolution. So you are at a crossroads right now where the people that have created all the problems in the world want to take total control of everyone.
Yeah, well, that's going to be more problematic for them than they may dream.
Yeah, well, that's not going to mean there isn't going to be a conflict, though, evidently. Let's just hope that they're deterred from that, and that maybe what I have to say tonight might have something to do with that. I hope so, because the real issue, and the one thing that I find important about the information that I'm offering, is that the people down their chain of command, the people that are responsible for making the decisions at a professional military level, like MJ-12, like the head of the think tanks, the CFR, and so forth, what they call themselves the professionals. These people have led the elite that have got all the money to believe that they have a safe haven for them no matter what happens. And they don't. They don't have bases on the moon and bases on Mars and elsewhere like they claim they have. You hear these stories about a galactic fleet, and you hear it, that's all hogwash. They have enough to be dangerous. They have enough technology to be dangerous, but not wise.
You must be from Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, hogwash, that's a good word.
I love it. There's so many words that southern colloquialisms that have a lot of color.
Yeah,
you know,
they
it's
do.
Like folk legends.
Some of them too much color for us to use on the air.
That's right. And I try very hard. I got in trouble one time, so I'm doing this.
Yeah, you did. You had to go stand in the corner.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to invite the audience to join the conversation here. And the way you do that, if you have a question or a comment about what we're talking about here tonight, you want to talk with James Horak, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And the telephone lines are open. All right? If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, we know it can be expensive to call us, although you can call us. That number will work. We have an additional feature for you on the website. It is called the Flash Message. And all you need to do is get over to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. And when you do, right above that picture is a link that says Flash Message, which you may use to communicate with us. It doesn't matter, you know, where else in the world you are, that will work. If you're in Canada or the USA, though, please use the telephone. Give us a call with your questions, with your comments for James Horak. What are we looking at then, James, whenever we look on the moon and we see all of these bases? There are buildings all over the moon. When we see these structures, is it ours formerly, or are we looking at extraterrestrial?
There were four bases that were going to be expanded out and made into living quarters, and that'd be extended, and then they'd dig tunnels, and they'd do this, and they'd do that.
Are you talking about four bases that were built by humans?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so it was a combination Soviet-American.
All right.
And English. Of course, there were, I would say, it was a NATO group, basically, that had set it up. And, most of the financing and the technical expertise was either Soviet or American.
All right.
But they had enlarged facilities. They had acquired means of transporting the materials that they would need. They were getting ready to actually try to build some cities, underground cities that were safe from radiation. They didn't have the means to protect them with protective field shielding that ET has. But So
what we're looking at then, when we see all of these buildings just all over the moon, is ET constructions.
Yeah. Now, almost, I would say at least 95% of everything you see, and most of their structures go inside the moon. There are vast cavities inside the moon where the machines are. And there's water. There's a number of things that make it very livable. There are ruins that go back 300,000 years.
On the surface or inside?
Inside.
Inside. All right. Let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, gentlemen, exciting show. James, I'm always excited when you're on. And there's so many different directions we could go with this, but I'd like to specifically address that which concerns us as humanity here. We have been used somewhat as a pawn in the game here between the EBs and the ETs. The EBs, who have aligned themselves with the elite, who are, creating the matrix of reality out here, or so-called reality. It's their generated, adulterated version of reality that enslaves us mentally and so on. I know that we as human beings have mental faculties at our disposal if we know how to access them, where we can be participants, active participants in this this kind of cosmic chess game going on, where we could become more active participants in freeing ourselves from this matrix that's been created by the combination of the EBs and the powers that be. And I know, James, that you have a handle on this. You know, you're pretty well versed in what we as people could do, and I wish you would explore that. Would you mind going there with us?
Not at all. I've always said that if you realize at the elemental level what's going on and face it, you have to give up your comfort zones that you have been given to you through a kind of socialization practice that begins with the school books that you, the textbooks that are used in your schools, and how they trend towards duplicity and trend towards anti-intellectualism. They trend towards false values, and they trend towards building this illusion of a comfort zone you have. You feel like, for instance, information's got to come through certain organs for it to be important. Well, by now you realize the information you're getting is nowhere near the reality that you're living. And that's more apparent every day as the American dream has gone down the drain. And we are virtually living in a have and have not society where the disparity between the classes, I mean, we were always taught this is a classless society. That again, to use good Southern expression, is hogwash. But the reality of the matter is that in spite of the ideologies that people confuse all the time, what we're headed towards is a corporate fascist police state. Now, my feeling is that Americans can't tolerate that, and that they will resist. And I think that if it was just a matter of that, they wouldn't have much of a chance. But I believe there are a lot of people on the inside of the New World Order machinery that are not happy with what they see. They can't see their children being raised in it. And they don't expect, if they have any, if they're students of history at all, they can't expect to survive it either. So what we have is we have conflicts at every level of this monstrosity-built society. And it's almost like the quiet before the storm. What we have is we have a gathering of tensions that are overwhelming to all concerned. And this can go in different ways. But I think that it's going to end in a way that where we have marked change and we're back in an evolutionary cycle, which we haven't been in thousands of years. It's going to be the end. I don't see any other way, because these would-be tyrants are not sane. They're talking about World War III. Nobody in their right mind, with what's at stake and what's at hand, would be talking about World War III and be sane. No one. But they are. So, you know, I couldn't believe that a general, a five-star general, would try to talk JFK into releasing everything that that we had against the Soviet Union during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
But he did. He did
but
try.
He did.
Yeah.
But he did. He did. And that was that would have been the end of your world.
Steve, you have another question or comment?
Well, just one. That's a pretty good expose, James, and I definitely resonate with what you're saying, and those are that's an important message to put out there on the airwaves, and I appreciate that. But could you, and I'll take this off air, could you get into what each individual, say, let's say if I were an individual who were just coming into, say, an awareness of the disparity between what the mainstream media is handing me, and I'm looking around and I'm just starting to see that things don't quite jive, what would I do if I were that person? What would I do to take a side and put my energy into the side that is, say, is pro-humanity, pro-life, and pro-the way things ought to be going? And I'll take it off air.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Well, what I would suggest you do, you know what political canvassing is. Get out and do some social canvassing. Go to see your neighbors. Find out what you need to know to make a convincing presentation on chemtrails, on GMO, genetically engineered vegetables and grains. And go out and have a heart-to-heart talk with your neighbors, and don't care about what they think about you. When you're through, they're going to know you're concerned about them. That's the important thing. And maybe you will affect enough awareness from what you can say to get them to look at it closely. At least they know that there is someone committed to an alternative viewpoint that's close to them, and they can see is a sane person, is a responsible person, is their neighbor. Do it with your relatives, do it with everyone, wake people up. Get them to understand the harsh realities. Things like, if you consent to go to a FEMA camp, you're never going to leave it alive.
All right, to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, I'm Sammy from Tennessee.
Hello, Sammy.
I have a quick question for Mr. Horak.
All right.
He mentioned that there was fungus eating through metal. Mm-hmm. Is there any way I could see this picture?
Well, let's just hope that Dr. Berggren overcomes whatever has driven him underground and still has copies of it. What I had was on a hard drive, a computer that wasn't even 2 years old, and I got an exotic virus, and I had a lot of stuff on it I would have saved if I had expected any problem like that. I was running an antivirus and everything. And this this burned out that drive.
Wow, so you lost the picture, and there's no way to see it now, right?
Well, I don't know. I know that Dr. Berggren had them, and I think he was going to put them in his second book. There was an attempt made on his life. A safe deposit box he had in a bank was rifled. And that's probably what was taken. That's what they wanted. Because the people that are concerned about this information getting out are the ones that have been lying to the elite all along that they do have a presence on Mars, that they do have a presence on the moon, and they have accommodations for them if worse comes to worse here on Earth. And they don't.
Right. And what you're saying, the connection is they don't because of this fungus.
Yeah, because they're run off. They have been shown they're not welcome, and they had better leave. And the fungus was the nice way of doing it.
That's incredible.
It is. It's kind of weird, isn't it?
This research hasn't been taken.
Are you the Sammy that we see on a spot talking about how all of this stuff is still freaking weird?
Yes.
You're the same Sammy. It is freaking weird.
I really
weird.
Love the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate that spot you sent us.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, so folks, right at the, when we took the break right in the middle of the show, you know, between the 2 hours, you saw a spot with a young lady, Sammy. That's her. How about that? All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello? Ah, well, nobody there. Okay, or maybe it was an E.T. calling us and just didn't have his translator on. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hello, Rex.
Hey. Hey, Anais said that we got chased off, but are there any permanent human populations on the Moon or Mars? Because we've heard persistent rumors of it, as well as rumors about teleportation capability to Mars.
Well, now the teleportation, that basically is transmission of matter. And they can transport non-living tissue or inanimate matter, but not anything alive. Yeah, they had that ability, but there's no point in doing it if you don't have a base or you don't have any operation going on. And there are no earthbound humans on the moon or on Mars now. There were up until 1982.
Okay, because there was the remote viewing done. Kevin, who was the person you had on, the guest that talked about his project?
Are you talking about Courtney Courtney Brown?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They had a project where they did remote viewing, and they were doing a facility on the Mars, and thought that they had seen humanoids there. Are you familiar about that?
He thought they saw humanoids, but not humans.
ETs are humanoids.
So they look like us, James?
Sure. They're cold bloods. They're some people that have special adaptations because of more severe environmental conditions or whatever, but essentially... you wouldn't be put off or scared of them if you met them, or you think that they were odd or anything. You get to know them. They're just like people. There are people from all over.
All right, Rex, you have another question or comment?
No, that's it.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think at this point, because of what you've just said, and the phones are open, folks, so go ahead and call. I need to tell you, folks, that everything that you ever heard about Dracula and everything you ever heard about the Mothman and all that, it's all fiction. But there was a real Dracula. Same thing about ETs. All that stuff you see in the movies, fiction. But there are. The real ET. Caller, can you hang on through the break?
Yeah, sure.
All right, hang on, and we'll get to you in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back.
Listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, James Horak. And, James, we've got a caller online. I just want to finish that thought, folks. All your images of extraterrestrials come from the movies and cartoons and from novels. Same as your images of Dracula. Well, there was a real Dracula. Nothing like what's in the novel. Not a nice guy, but still, nothing like what's in the novel or the movies. So there is the fiction we get fed, and then there's the reality. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, James, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hello, Brent.
And for anyone who wants to know about the real Dracula, look up Vlad the Impaler. He wasn't a nice guy.
No.
No.
Now, James, I'm going to ask you to comment about a couple things. I don't know why I know this, but because I haven't visited with E.T. at all, at least not that I know of. But so far as I know, E.T. will not let the elites off this planet, and E.T. will not let them use their nuclear weapons. Is that right?
Well, they've stopped. There have been two attempts to start World War III that have been stopped. That's not going to continue. I mean, you can't babysit savages. When I say savages, I'm not talking about people in general. I am talking about the savage leadership that seems to prevail among nations on this planet.
Okay, what's your second one?
Developed nations.
Yeah, what's your second one, Brent?
What'd you say, Kevin?
You said you had two questions. What's the second one?
Yeah, the other one was they are not going to be let off this planet.
No, they've already been told that. But, of course, they think that they can build some kind of technology to overcome people that are, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of years ahead of them. That's moronic.
Naive. Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to check in on you.
All right, thanks for the call, Brent. We appreciate it very much. We have a flash message from Scotland. In fact, we have two. The first one is two from Scotland. How about that? The first one is Ross, and Ross says, "Hi, Kevin and James. Has E.T. tried to reprogram the EBs so that they betray their New World Order chums? Great show tonight, as always. Cheers, Ross." So what about that? Has E.T. tried to reprogram the EBs?
They can do it. It isn't hard, but it's not. It's just something that it's stooping in their minds. It's stooping. It's like they draw a line on how to conduct antagonisms, and that's not something. They did take over two EBs that I know of. Remember the show you did with Mr. Sims, where he's talking about the little girl that was visited by EBs.
Yeah, yeah.
And they took them over on that occasion because what they wanted to do was share something that they felt was important to share, and that was the formula for Electrum. And that's why they put those in the girl's nose, and whenever they lost them, they came back the next night and put them in the nose again. So they can do it and have done it,
but it's not generally practiced.
No.
Okay, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Jerome.
Hi, Mr. Horak.
Hello, Jerome.
My question to you is, you seem to be hoping that the insiders will turn against their leadership. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes.
You know, Kevin pleads for people to come on. He the other day he asked for pilots to give their opinion on what he was viewing on his Mars flyover, and other times he's asked for technicians and scientists to call in, and it seems like nobody wants to respond.
That's because they're chickens.
It would be suicide. But when the conflict starts, and there's resistance, that gives them a base. That gives them a support on the outside so that it isn't suicide. And the fact of the matter is, everybody's looking ahead, and what you see isn't tenable for any sane man or woman. So it doesn't matter anymore. You know, there's still the hope that these monsters will want to survive and keep all their wonderful luxury and back off. But, you know, I think they're a lost cause. My hope is pinned on their captains and lieutenants, the people they will need to facilitate and implement what they have in mind. That's where I'm pinning my hope.
I like the direction you gave Steve as far as to get involved, and I think there's more people who are able to do that than who are not chicken, as Kevin said.
Well, yeah. I go out to the base and do things out on the base, and I talk to people out there. I talk to some military people. I talk to people whenever I go anywhere, and I get a reasonable reception, and I get into things that wouldn't have carried 5 years ago, but are now, because people are opening up. The realizations that they're having to face is opening them up to possibility. It's opening up them up to discovery. The important thing is try to be where that person has already is, and go from there. Don't try to just cloud
you,
over.
You don't go from where you are. You go from where they are.
Yeah, that's right. And then you add, and eventually they come around. I've had people that were antagonistic because I didn't do that. I wasn't sensitive enough to pick up where they were before I started trying to talk to them, and so they got. You know, they probably thought I was crazy. And then, as things happen, now this person who is the son-in-law of my neighbor, a nice lady lives right next door, has come around. And he has become something of a survivalist. He's now he realizes the truth about 911 to some extent, and and that carries over to Oklahoma City, it carries over to Waco, it carries over to Ruby Ridge, going on back. Government out of control.
Just the changes a little bit. Where does China fit in on this? By that I mean, it seems like they're not chased off the moon. And you said that
they weren't there at that time.
Well, they're not there now.
I think. I know that there has been. They don't. ET hasn't any formal relations established with anyone on Earth, but I know that they have had contact with the Chinese. And what may come of that, I don't know. But I'm hopeful because I've always been pro-Chinese. I think it's a wonderful culture and wonderful people. But you bring up the Chinese. Let me tell you something about the Chinese. The New World Order crowd thought that they could get the Chinese in bed with them by giving them favored nation clause. So that's why we got all the Chinese crap. That's why they've ended up with so many American dollars. So once they got all these American dollars, certainly they're going to try to protect the petrodollar, right? Uh-uh.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese are the very first to start minting a currency backed by gold, which is going to play havoc with the petrodollar. And it'll also, if these monsters that have looted this country of financial asset don't return it when the adjustment is made on the petrodollar, which is basically the dollar, when that happens, we'll have a hyperinflation and all the devil will break loose here. That's why they're after the guns. That's why all this crap is going on, because they're hoping before that happens to have us all under their thumb.
Okay, now to bring this back to what this show is about, how is any of that related to the moon?
Well, it's the basic reason, the destabilization of the people and depopulation and all these plans that the New World Order has is the reason why they wanted to establish on the moon and on Mars, so they would have refuge.
Okay, but now that they know, by the way, Jerome, thank you for the call. Now that they know that they don't have refuge on the moon and Mars, why would they go forward with a destabilization plan for the planet when they've got no place to escape to?
Well, that's the point, Kevin. I don't think they did know. I don't think the elite who's been funding all this knew. That's why it was important to tell them, to give them to wise them up to what they're doing is disastrous for them. They're going to end up being eliminated by the very people that they've been funding.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. This is Barrett from West Virginia.
Hello, Barrett.
Hey, just had a quick question about the humanoids. How often do we come in contact with them during our everyday life? And what are the telltale signs that we're in contact with them? And I'll take the answer off air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Most of them have the ability to psychically block their appearance. Blondes, for instance, they can psychically block their appearance, so that a 7-foot woman can walk by you, and if you see her, you'll be the only one around that'll see her. Everybody else won't see how unusual that she is and how extraordinary. And that happened to me in San Diego when I was in boot camp on my first Liberty.
Okay. I want to get to this flash message from Dale in Scotland before we hit this next break. And we'll let you answer this when we... Well, we'll see. Maybe you might have time before the break. This is from Dale in Scotland. Did not George W. Bush know about being evicted from the moon? If so, what possessed him to announce that NASA would return to the moon? You got about 30 seconds.
Well, you know, these people don't tell the truth. They've got some agenda working under that untruth. And arrogance, haughtiness, a belief that they can take a baby step to overcome a giant's gate. Well, it's just not possible. But that doesn't keep them from acting insanely.
Okay, so did George W. Bush know? We'll get the answer when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, James Horak. We have a caller on hold, James, but I want to get your response to this. Did not George Bush know that we had been told to leave and don't come back?
I believe he did. I don't know it as a definite fact, but just about anyone that's ever been a former head director of the CIA knows these things.
No, I'm talking about George W.
Oh, George W.
Because yeah. He's the one that said we're going to go back to the moon. Did not he know?
Well, Daddy did. And if Daddy kept it from him, it was because, he didn't want to know.
Okay. Good enough. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jonathan from North Carolina.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, is the moon an artificial construct? And
yes.
When do you think it was it actually put in place with its face facing the Earth all the time? What's the story with that?
The moon is got a substructure. It's artificial. The mass that's on it has been collected, been taken from other bodies because it initially was constructed to be the home base for a colonial effort by your ancestors. And it had everything that they needed. What they wouldn't realize whether or not they'd need where they were going, some 300 light years away. So you had today you have an oversized moon that is not natural to the Earth, that is kept in place with machines that operate in a way that adjusts the gravity or the gravitational relationship between the Earth and Moon every 12 minutes or so, because the Moon wants to go out or it wants to come in, and so these machines keep a parity that prevents you from having a constant gravity wave, and this is not a good thing.
Okay. Jonathan, let me ask you, do you have another question or a comment?
Well, yeah, I'm saying it now. I'm saying the reason that they put it there was because they wanted society, humans, to flourish on the Earth, you know, to stabilize the tides and the weather. Is that why they put it there?
Well, that's an important point, and yes, because... the Earth didn't have a moon, and that's one reason why its vulcanization stage lasted so long. There's a lot to stabilizing a planet and to producing the right kind of a friendly atmosphere, a magnetosphere, everything that you need with having a moon driving the core, the mantle around the core. And this provides all of these things in a stable way. So that was one thing. But the moon, that because it was part of home, because it was a relic of a deep past that they had lost, they didn't want they wanted it, but it wasn't appropriate to the Earth. It wasn't appropriate to Mars. But that ended up there. It has an inconstant mass. It has gravity wave fluctuations or gravity field fluctuations constantly. And they know all this. They know that something like what I'm talking about is going on. They just don't. It's like anything else. They don't want anybody to know anything for sure before them. So until they figure
that's
it out
amazing.
And can tailor
stuff.
It to fit what they want you to know and what they don't want you to know, then, it's like it didn't exist.
All right, Jonathan, thank you for the call. Very interesting.
Very good question.
Excellent
good
question. Yep. Excellent question. All right, we're just about out of time, and we really don't have time for any more calls, but I want to thank everyone who did call, and I want to thank the people who sent flash messages, and let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you make it happen. With your telephone calls, with your flash messages, you make it happen, because you think of things I could not possibly think of, and you've always heard two heads are better than one. Well, millions of heads out there listening to the show are better than just mine. And so thank you. I appreciate you calling, and I hope each and every one of you will call us again, because we do this every night. And we will, of course, be here tomorrow night, and we'll invite you to call in then as well. Now, James, very quickly, let me ask you this. You have the reputation of being very controversial. As I said at the beginning of the show, you'll not only raise eyebrows, you might singe a few. Does it bother you having that reputation?
Not at all. Not at all.
Are you aware that you have that reputation?
Well, I expect people to be skeptical. I expect them to have unfavorable reactions to what I say. It's natural. But I'm planting thoughts there. Mm-hmm. I'm giving them something to think about that they might not have thought about otherwise. Because it's like any time you see two cars about to hit head-on, and you run out in the street and try to keep them from hitting head-on, don't you?
No.
Well, I mean, maybe that is a poor example.
Two cars that are about to hit head-on, I figure they want to. I'm not getting in the middle of that fight.
No. That's a bad example.
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying. If you see disaster about to happen, you do try to warn people. Some will open their minds and some will not. And one of the things that I've noticed, you've been on this show a number of times and you've never asked anybody to believe anything.
No. I'm not talking about anything. There are a lot of things I could talk about. I don't have any basis to talk about, nothing to point to. But everything that I've ever said on this show has a reference. You know, mm-hmm. It'll reference to something else. And, you know, like the EMVs, you can see them.
And have there been some fantastic pictures of EMVs lately? Have you seen the one of the cube?
Oh, yeah.
Man.
I told you they'd be displaying for you. Like, do you see that CME that shot off there with all that plasma?
Yeah.
There was enough plasma in that to make 10 Earths.
Well, it's a good thing it didn't directly hit us.
Oh, no. No, you're protected. Mm. You're protected. As long as those EMVs are there, there's no planet in this system going to be harmed by CMEs.
Well, that's good news. That's excellent news. James, if you will, stay on the line with me as I bring this in for a landing, and thank you for being with us. What happened there? Thank you for being with us for tonight's show. I appreciate it, and if you will, just stay on the line with me. Well, ladies and gentlemen, each and every show here at the Kevin Smith Show, we try to bring you information to expand your horizons for thinking. Nobody's asking you to believe anything, and we don't present information in an effort to try and get you to believe anything. We present information because it is information that is being censored. It's information that's being suppressed and kept from the public. And you have a right to know. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.